jobs and their family.
In their 40s, they came to a country where they didn't know the language. They had very little support. My parents worked long, hard hours at low-paying jobs and faced discrimination. I vowed to make my parents proud. I was going to be a success and show them that I appreciated all their sacrifices. To this day, I continue to feel indebted to my parents for all their hard choices and the actions that they took. I would not be standing here if it were not for them. Sorry. The Korean culture places importance on obedience, respecting our elders, more gadgets, and not questioning authority. My parents reinforced this to us and taught us to have a strong work ethic, respect ourselves, and to encourage personal growth, responsibility, and accountability. They wanted us to strive for the best, for excellence, for us to always want more, to do more, and to be more. My parents were seekers. They converted from Buddhism to Christianity. I was raised with faith, and I always had a relationship with God. I went to church every Sunday and grew up going to vacation Bible school, learning with our pastor. I even gave tithes from my babysitting money. Our church was constantly doing acts of charity to help those less fortunate. I prayed every night to God that I should be the best daughter and person I could be. However, I did have questions, but I didn't ask them. Not in my church. I swallowed my doubts, and what did I know? I was not a pastor. I was just a kid. In that faith, even if things don't quite make sense, it doesn't matter. Because the more blind faith you have, the better you are. I had the typical public school experience. As an immigrant, all you want to do is fit in. But you feel like you have to prove yourself. I tried to be the best at everything I did. Diving, track, dance team, student council. I needed the validation of my peers and the approval of my parents. They had high expectations. A 96 was not good enough. My sisters and I were expected to pay our way, our own way, to college or get scholarships. Baruch Hashem, I did both. I went to the University of Iowa to study journalism. I worked hard and had a normal college experience. I wanted to be the next Katie Couric. My goal was to work in Chicago as a news anchor before I was 30. I wanted my parents and their friends to see me reporting live. I received competitive and coveted internships in major markets. Yet I knew there were people who were more qualified. I wasn't sure exactly how or why I got them, I got these special opportunities, but I was just thankful and determined to make the most of them. From each internship, I learned that I wanted more. I was hungry to start my career. Straight out of college, I was fortunate to start as a reporter on air at KWWL, Iowa's news channel. I covered the local news, including the Corn Festival, accidents, and fires. If I didn't get lost along the way, since there was no GPS at the time. But it was not fulfilling. It wasn't enough. I wanted to do more. This led to new opportunities on TV. I did commercials, some shows, and momentum was quickly building for me. I was doing things that people were working very hard to do, but which came easily for me. At the time, I thought it was luck. At the time, I thought it was luck. How could I not walk through the doors that were being opened for me? I was now on primetime TV. With every new experience, instead of appreciating the moment, I couldn't wait for the next one. There was always something bigger and better. Each time I accomplished a goal, I was left wanting more. I was never satisfied. I was in New York auditioning on 9/11. I was only a few streets away from where the tragedy struck, but it planted a seed. I started to rethink my priorities. The glitz and the glam of the entertainment industry fades real fast. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be, exciting and new. The veil was lifted. I saw firsthand how flawed celebrities were and how morally corrupt Hollywood was. It was a very toxic environment. I needed time to reevaluate everything, so I went back home to Chicago to be with my family. It grounded me. I realized that I didn't want to go back. I was done going to castings with 50 other girls who looked just like me, who wanted just more than I did. It wasn't fulfilling. Not for me. It was not the place I was meant to be. There had to be more. My agent and my friends thought I was totally crazy. They thought I was totally throwing everything away. They tried to talk me out of it, and they couldn't understand why I was choosing to walk away from what they considered to be a road to the top. Okay, when you don't have God in your life, Hashva Shalom, public recognition, adoration, and accomplishment is success. In retrospect, I see that I had to experience these things for me to truly appreciate the gift that Hashem was giving me. He was showing me that everything that I thought I wanted and would make me happy, it did not fulfill me. I knew that it was time for a new direction. I also knew with certainty that I needed to be true to myself, to my beliefs and my desires. I wanted marriage, I wanted kids, I wanted a life of meaning. And then, unexpectedly, I met Andrew. He was my husband. He was unlike anyone I had ever met before. I remember literally trying to use every big word I knew because I wanted to impress him. He was out of my league. And Hashem made this match. Think about all the things that had to happen in order for us to be together. I had to move halfway across the world. We had to meet at the right time. We're 10 years apart. And we lived very different lives. At the time, I was a religious Christian, and he was a non-observant Jew. Didn't make sense, but it was bullshit. When we started dating, Andrew and I made a commitment to learn about each other's cultures. He knew everything about being Korean in 2 weeks. I had much more to unpack. I felt comfortable exploring Judaism because I was solid in my own faith. I had grown up with friends, Jewish friends, who had a fancy bar or bat mitzvah. They had a Hanukkah tree, and they had a lot more school off than us. None of them were affiliated in any way, and I remember a family member once telling me that the beauty of Judaism is that you can practice it any way you want. They did not know Torah. I started to share with Andrew what I was learning from my Reform rabbi, and based on what I was learning and what he was learning, he told me that he wasn't so sure. Although he had grown up conservative and rejected the custom-tailored Judaism that he had been taught, he was dedicating himself more and more to learning from traditional sources. I, on the other hand, was becoming increasingly confused. Andrew made a suggestion that we begin to learn with a real rabbi. That rabbi was Ezra Belsky. I had never met someone Orthodox in my life. Rabbi Belsky opened my eyes. Our learning answered many dormant questions that I had from growing up. I began to realize that the questions that I never asked when I was younger had real answers that made sense. I began to have a clearer picture of what I believed. We kept on learning. People I knew tried to convince me not to go forward, that I would never be accepted, my children would be discriminated against, that it was a cult, that I was being brainwashed, that women were second-class citizens. One person even told me I was selling my soul. I was confused and conflicted. It was daunting, overwhelming. I asked Hashem to give me the clarity to help me do what I was supposed to do. I felt like I was being torn apart. I had tremendous guilt. I felt like I was abandoning my family. And now I see that I really needed my parents' acceptance in order for me to move forward. They gave me the strength to keep on exploring. They supported me through my search for knowledge during my spiritual growth. My parents encouraged me to ask God for clarity, to seek a closer relationship with God. Then I recognized that being a Torah observant Jew was exactly that, the closest relationship you can have with Hashem. My prayers were being answered, and Hashem was showing me the way. This is what he always wanted from me. I saw the emes, and there was no growing back. this was going to be the biggest decision of my life, to start a new life. Andrew and I continued to learn and more and do more. We inspire each other. We didn't always go or grow at the same pace, and I feel blessed that we were able to make this commitment to Torah together and not lose our relationship along the way. I wanted to know what I was taking on. Practically, I thought, how in the world am I going to do 613? I was riddled with anxiety that I was going to mess up. So slowly, I started taking on what I was learning. And I needed to do it this way because I didn't want to feel resentful or that I was being pushed too fast. I wanted to make conscious decisions of what I could do. Bit by bit, Baruch Hashem, I was able to do more and more. But how was I going to keep kosher? I love non-kosher seafood. My dad used to joke that I needed to marry a fisherman. Not being able to eat my mother's cooking was very hard for me. It was my favorite. And besides, I knew how to cook three things. This was another lesson that seems like a major obstacle that is just another opportunity to build your relationship with Hashem. Next, I started learning with Rabbi Belsky's sister, Molly Cohen. I really enjoyed learning with her. She was funny, relatable, and knowledgeable. She helped me in so many ways. I'm not sure if I could have taken this next step without her guidance, but everything was not easy. One of my issues, one of many, was that I didn't understand stance. I asked, who cares about arms? How can showing your leg, in a skirt below the knee, be more sneeze than wearing pants that cover your entire leg? When you're not raised with this sensitivity to sneeze, your version of what is normal is not relatable. It was at least for me. I couldn't relate. And then Molly told me, this isn't my hair, it's a wig. It blew my mind. I was like, what? I always loved my hair, and I didn't know why you needed to cover your hair. And how does covering your hair with someone else's beautiful hair make any sense? It was a hard transition for me. I tried to cover my hair in every different kind of hat and hairdo. Then finally, I bought a wig. One of too many. I had a family wedding to attend, and I wanted to make a Kiddush Hashem by showing that you can be sneeze and beautiful. I was not going to play into anyone's stereotypes. And when we started to keep Shabbos, I still had to break Shabbos by turning on a light or doing something like that because you cannot fully keep Shabbos until you convert. We had never experienced a real Shabbos. Although Rabbi Belsky had offered many times to host us as guests, I thought the idea of spending 25 hours with someone else's family sounded crazy. But we soon realized that we couldn't do it on our own. Our next step was to become part of a community. So we moved to Skokie, which we thought was Borough Park. And Hashem was helping us every step of the way through my conversion and our marriage, the next phase of our lives. He was always there guiding us along. We met new friends who helped us feel welcome right away. I have tremendous Hakaras HaTov to David and Deborah Michael. Deborah is a real balabusta in Ashes Hayel. She makes everything look easy. She taught me how to make Shabbos, do Haknasas Orchim, and many more mitzvot. We literally spent every Shabbos with them for a year until I thought I could finally do it on my own. Don't even ask me about Pesach. We met a lot of other wonderful families, like Esther and Ilya Shulman, Lori and Aaron Miller, and other friends. As our family grew, we appreciated more and more our friends who became like family, and our children are like cousins now. They, along with Rabbi Yochanan and Yonah Posner, made us feel like we were part of a community. Later, we became part of the Skokie Kollel as well and met lots of nice families, including Rabbi and Rebbetzin Kreisman and the Wurches. My family has been so blessed to have the continued support and encouragement from our rabbis and Rebbetzins. They continually help us to learn and grow. They were instrumental in challenging us not to be complacent and not to get too comfortable in our observance. My goal is to do a little more each day, however small. Currently, I'm working on not raising my voice to my children before they go to school. Right now, life is not what it would be. It's not what I thought it would be. If you would have asked me if I was going to be from a mom of six, I would have said, you have the wrong girl. If I didn't find the MS, I would be totally different. My life would be totally different. I thank Hashem every day for all my blessings, for the life that we live, the Torah we learn, the family and the friends that we have, the community that we're a part of. I continue to be inspired every day from my own children. They're Yiddish Achim. They make me want to be the person I aspire to be. My message to you is that you don't need to look elsewhere. What the world thinks, success, fame, that it's something to strive for, because it's not. It's all empty. I've been there firsthand, and I can tell you that it's all an illusion. It's fake and fleeting. It is not real. But the Torah is real, and doing Hashem's will is the only reality there is. May we all continue to grow and grow and inspire each other more and more. Everyone has their journey, and this is mine. Thank you for letting me share my story with you.
Thank you, Ruth, for your eloquence and your articulate sharing of your beautiful story. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker. Next page. Mrs. Marianne Brash was born in Lexington, Kentucky, and raised in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. I don't know if I pronounced that right either. I'm sorry. She was brought up in an observant Catholic community while attending an all-girls parochial school. She graduated from University of Wisconsin-Madison and with a BA in sociology and a BS in biology. She later went on to earn her MBA from University of Cincinnati and DePaul University with an emphasis on entrepreneurship. After graduate school, she founded a real estate company and fertility company in partnership with her husband, Dr. Joel Brash. Her greatest achievement, however, are her six children, Hannah, Spencer, Maxwell, Lillian, Abigail, and Noah. Mrs. Brash.
Good evening. Sorry. I don't know if they can hear me. Can you hear me? Thank you, Rabbi Frankel, Rabbi Bran, Mora Kraft, and the entire Neely team. Let's take a journey together. Join me on my 28-year journey from a Filipino Catholic Wisconsin girl to an observant Jew, or Jewish princess, as my kids would say. As we begin, allow me to explain that every Shabbos, as my husband makes Kiddush, the first Hebrew words I learned in English were bittersweet. V'garecha asher b'sharecha, a stranger amongst us. I reflect that I was once a stranger amongst, but no longer do I feel that way. Let's begin our journey with a vision. Envision my son, Spencer. Spencer's love for Judaism was reinforced by his love for fencing. He was told that he could never reach national status as a Shomer Shabbos Jew. He never gave up. In 2011, he achieved national status in the International World Maccabi Games while being the only kippah-wearing Jew. He motivated the team to honor Shabbat by not attending Saturday practices. This example, in turn, inspired the entire fencing team, from non-practicing Jews to conservative Jews, to keep at least that one Shabbos. This Saturday, which was most anticipated to be a day of parties and sightseeing, was spent at the coach's house where they celebrated what was, for many, their first meaningful Shabbos. Or envision Hannah, my eldest daughter. As an 8-year-old, my eldest daughter, Hannah, observed my Orthodox wedding. It was my third conversion, as well as my third wedding, and yes, to the same man. My first wedding was reform. My second wedding was conservative. My third and final wedding, I hope, was orthodox. I remember the enchantment in her eyes as she witnessed Rabbi Hertz, Rabbi Lopatin, Rabbi Well, and Rabbi Posner as they officiated my last and final wedding. I can only imagine what this meant to my daughter as an 8-year-old, as a bat mitzvah, and now as a soon-to-be bride. Or envision Maxwell, watching my son Maxwell finish his 70-kilometer march and get sworn into the IDF as a paratrooper, confirm my lifelong wish of seeing my children embark on their own paths of passion for Judaism and Israel. It brought tears to my eyes to discover that the reason he joined was to protect Israel, the home of our Jewish nation, for future generations. Or envision Lily, my fourth daughter, or my fourth child, and my fourth daughter. Lillian survived a tumultuous birth within days of my father's death. When Rabbi Lopatin took her chosen name, Eliana, and changed it to Aliana with an Aleph in honor of my father, Alfonso, Aleph Ashalom, it made me feel sure that I had chosen a religion that takes yesterday's memories and transforms them in tomorrow's legacy. Or a vision of Abigail and Noah, my two little ones, a.k.a. the girlies. I have memories of my two baby girls being renamed by Rabbi Schusterman, Aleph Ashalom. They were given full Hebrew names, Abigail Noah Brash and Noah Kohava Brash. I remember feeling so blessed that we were surrounded with such caring and loving people, which only our journey through Judaism could have connected us. Rabbi Schusterman, a man who had not even known us, heard about our story and wanted to personally be an instrumental part in furthering our journey. While many were reluctant to further our conversion, Rabbi Schusterman stepped in and ensured our Orthodox conversions were official. As it turns out, we were the rabbi's last order of official business, for he had passed away days later. Zecharona Lavracha. My journey begins with my parents. Let's learn together about parents. The sixth Aliyah of Kiddushim states the 318th prohibition: one shall not curse his or her father or mother. It was a shock that with such minimal words, a person would be punished to death. Such an action can be met with a punishment that is so finite? Why is the act of cursing parents met with such extreme consequences? Why are parents held on such a high level? Wait, all the parents in here are probably thinking, she's a parent herself, and she doesn't know why we are held at such a high level? But truthfully, the punishment of death, this seems a bit extreme. There are three answers I came across while trying to understand parental honor and dishonor. Firstly, honoring your mother and father can be found directly in the Ten Commandments. As it says, honor your father and mother, for your days will be lengthened. This is easily understood when aligning parents' importance with the most prestigious laws in the whole Torah. Inscribed in the Torah and delivered directly to Bnei Yisrael or High Sinai was a handpicked occasion by Hashem. We are taught by sages that the commandments number 1 through 5 are based on the relationship between God and man. And the second set commandment numbers 6 through 10 are based on the relationship between man and man. One can conclude that honoring our parents is purposefully placed in the godly section, being that it is the fifth commandment. How can parents be placed in this section with regard to the relationship with godly matters? Therefore, parents are on a whole new level, making them even more close to Hashem. not cursing our parents, and showing parental respect. Secondly, that parents are placed on a high level is a reason I like to incorporate Pirkei Avot, Chapter 1, Mishnah 6. Aseh lacharav, make yourself a teacher. In this Mishnah, we are taught that a student or one yearning to learn should find a teacher and make himself a rav. Compare a parent to the teacher and a child to the student. Children emulate what they see in their parents, not what they are told. Students emulate what they understand and feel towards their teachers, not simply what they are forced to memorize. Parents and teachers carve the pathway and provide children and students with the tools that they need to navigate life. In teaching and guiding our children and students, we earn respect. Aseh lacharav, to make our first rav, one might postulate that we have to look no further than into the loving eyes of our parents. My father. Thirdly, parents are on a high level because they have the power to control life. Presents come in multiple forms. Clothing, cars, items with a gift receipt. The gift of life comes tagless, if you're not counting tuition in summer camp. This can be understood with a mashal or a parable. A man was once drowning in a lake in a small town. A stranger passing saw this man struggling to swim. The stranger brought him to safety by lifting him out of the water. The stranger granted this drowning man the gift of life, the non-returnable present. Now we can agree this man owes the stranger much more than money. He owes him respect and the restraint of potential criticism and lashana hara, evil words. So too with parents granting their children with the gift of life, this automatically places the reciprocal gift of respect. With the internet, children potentially respect online Google more than they do their parents. With increasing technology, parents lose the ability to teach their children much information. According to statistics tabulation, moms have increased internet browsing with usage to 211 minutes per day on the average. This means browsing more and parenting less. So it seems modern times grants greater opportunity to witness less respect between child and parent and child. But within this pasuk, Hashem says and lays out the harshest punishment of our parental disrespect, the punishment of death. Whether death is a threat or an inevitable societal outcome, in any case, parental disrespect leads to our collective demise. Parents are not perfect. Me. We make mistakes. We lose our temper. We, perhaps in a hot moment, we curse our children. But ultimately and universally, parents will always be the primary rav to their children, and the child will always have the intense obligation to respect, honor, and not curse his or her parents, thereby providing the glue to cement family, society, and our world together. My father, my Rav, was an observant, God-loving man. He encouraged me to convert. So I did. My journey commenced. My journey continues with theology, which with transliterations, and with 30 pounds of burnt brisket. But mostly, my journey continues with friends like you here tonight, my role models. Rabbi Asher Lopatin, when we started attending Atzei Shalom, I was very disillusioned at the thought of sitting in a synagogue where men and women sit separate. Rabbi Lopatin immediately came over to me on the women's side and handed me a sitter and pointed to the page where we were davening. He continued to do so throughout that Shabbos and for the Shabboses going forward. Thank you, Rabbi Lopatin, for journeying with me. Rabbi Schusterman, Alav Shalom. Rabbi Schusterman had faith in my family when others did not. He took our family under his wings, and he reconverted all of us and performed a bris for my sons, along with Rabbi Lopatin, Rabbi Hertz, Rabbi Turkolov, Taub, to Orthodox Judaism. When I sat across the kitchen table from him, It was as though my father, Olav Vashalom, was with us at the table, speaking with Rabbi Schusterman. After my time with Rabbi Schusterman, I found out that he had passed away the following week. Our family was his last official obligation. Thank you, Rabbi Schusterman, for journeying with me. Rabbi Baruch Hertz and Rebbetzin Chani Hertz. To this day, I do not know how we met, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Hertz. All I know is that my life changed dramatically after having met the both of them. Not only did they encourage us to grow as individuals, but they encouraged us to grow as a married couple. Rabbi and Rebbetzin Hertz were very kind, gentle, and inspiring. They guided us, supported us, and made sure that they taught us to swim, and eventually they let us go. Coming full circle, they met and approved of our future son-in-law at my mother-in-law's shiva in our home. Thank you, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Hertz, for journeying with me. Rabbi Harvey Well and Rabbi Engel. Rabbi Well was very kind, engaging, and very sincerely welcoming. When we made the move to Skokie and joined Oratora, I was very intimidated and felt a sense of not belonging. Rabbi Well approached me with a very warm smile. I waited every week to attend davening and listen to Rabbi Well's sermons, which were, by the way, very easily understandable and incredibly enlightening. Rabbi Well truly made our family feel that we finally found our home, and Rabbi Engel has truly carried forward this feeling. We are proud to be a part of the ceremony dedicating a Sefer Torah in honor of Rabbi Well's Aliyah to Israel. Here, too, I felt my father's presence. Thank you, Rabbi Well and Rabbi Engel, for journeying with me. My dear friend who sat with me every Shabbos for the past 18 years. Since the very first day I came to shul at Oratora, has guided me through every prayer, ceremony, and holiday. She taught me the meaning behind every sentence and word. Had she had not been a part of my life, shul would be merely just a pastime and not the spiritual experience it is for me today. I look forward to every Shabbos with her. Thank you, my dear friend, for journeying with me. Auntie. My sister-in-law lovingly embraced me at my first Passover. She took me into the kitchen and handed me a piece of matzah slathered with margarine. She said, "Trust me, take this. You won't be eating for the next 3 hours." Because of her, because of Auntie, I learned to lovingly embrace others. Hubby. My husband never coerced me to convert. In fact, we married each other with me not being a Jew. He encouraged me, along with my father's advice, to study both Catholicism and Judaism before we embarked on marriage. It was important that we understand both religions. We slowly grew together. We began our journey in a Reformed temple while honoring Shabbat with a takeout pizza, one challah, and a candle lighting ceremony. Eventually, we started to attend Friday night services at a conservative synagogue. Soon after that, we started walking to shul on the high holidays. Shortly thereafter, we started walking every Shabbos to an Orthodox synagogue, culminating in our beautiful move to Skokie as congregants of Oratora. Thank you, my best friend, for journeying with me. My journey is with God, ultimately. When I light Shabbos candles, I close my eyes. I feel peaceful. I know that my family will be together to spend this magical, undying, uninterrupted time to laugh, cry, fight, hug, eat, sleep, and be with God. My journey is with God. When my lips and my heart said goodbye to my father, Olav Vashalom, and my mother-in-law, Olav Vashalom, I feel complete. I feel proud, happy, and sweet that I am carrying on our Jewish heritage as my mother-in-law did and as my father encouraged me to. My journey is with God, as I dream of holding my first grandchild in my arms, while I softly whisper the Shema. My grandchildren are my legacy, living proof of my never-ending love of Hashem and Judaism. As it is written, your children are your crown, but your grandchildren are your jewels. My journey continued with God. A personal story, this is about my father. Many years ago, when my son Spencer was in first grade, Solomon Schechter held their annual Humash play. My father, being very ill, was not able to drive a car. As an alternative, he took a Greyhound bus from Door County, Wisconsin, to Skokie, where the play was held. Not being Jewish, he had no obligation to attend the play. Even being a grandparent, he had no obligation to drive 4.5 hours. From this, I learned the real meaning of respecting parents, the way that he found a way to respect others, by just being a parent and being himself. My dad, not being a Jew, has been my Rav through the years. He was the sole reason I converted. He sat me down and told me to study both religions before I embarked on marriage. In the end, parents may not be perfect, but parents are solely the most holiest, distinct, and kind person that one could only be, and the only way to treat them is respect, with respect. As I reflect, I think I initially converted to honor my father, but ultimately journeyed forward in Judaism to honor my children. I began tonight with a group of visions. I took you through my journey to Judaism. My closing vision for you. I can picture my daughter, Hannah, standing with tears of joy under the chuppah with her Israeli chatan, Ron, as they add one more link to the perpetual circle of Jewish life and add one more bracha to the 5,000 plus years of Judaism as they step on the glass and shout L'chaim. While the final scene, this true vision, has not yet happened, I'm proud to announce, God willing, this next phase of my journey is scheduled to occur September 1st, 2019. My journey continues. Thank you.
Yes, they're for you.
Wow. Thank you so much to both of our speakers for speaking so eloquently and sharing your journeys with us tonight. I think we have a few minutes to take some questions, if that's okay with Mrs. Brash and Mrs. Brashka. So if anyone would like to ask any, both or either one, do you guys want to sit over here for a few minutes just to answer some questions? Just a few minutes. Any questions? I know it's always hard to be the first one, and you need a few minutes to think. Yes.
Okay. So, how are your parents?
My parents?
Yes. How are your parents?
My parents are the most amazing people ever. They come over every day to help me with my children. They are totally respectful, and always have been. My mom used to help me make Shabbos when I didn't have. I mean, we started out with like no one besides me and my mom. They still, I mean, they supported, my mom before Shavuot, and she's like, so this is a holiday when what? You got the, they're still very active in their church, and my mom, she's reading the Bible, and she knows a lot. So, and she once said, she's like, I could never be Jewish. Kosher food's too expensive. I'm like, okay. So, yes, they're wonderful.
That's it? No more?
Lynn, you could ask one more question.
I just run the thing. I'm just moderating.
thank you so much to everyone. Obviously,
right
this. Oh, oh, thank you.
How, I mean, you spoke so amazing, both of you. How, I'm not sure how to word it, but how, you're comfortable talking about it in public? You know, because it's not always it's something that people are always so comfortable talking about.
I have to tell you, I am not comfortable, but after much thought, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have people reaching out to me, guiding me, helping me. I wanted, and also my motto, one of my biggest mottos is to give back to the community that has given so much to me, and I'm hoping that I touch someone tonight, or someone's relative, or someone who's struggling, to hopefully help them find their way.
So I think if you've spent Shabbos with us, you've heard our story, like an abridged version. I actually get it a lot where, you know, randomly people will be like, what's your story? The first time I was toiveling stuff, this lady's like, I was there with my mom, she was, you know, casing us. I'm like, because I would break in here and do this. But no, people ask me all the time. And I mean, it's part of the package. Like, I used to be really kind of defensive or just self-conscious, I think, because, you know, my friend and I joke, I'm a unicorn. I stick out, and it's fine. So I'm more comfortable now, so I don't, you know, take offense or get embarrassed or awkward necessarily. But, sorry, yeah.
Hi, I forgot. The second speaker.
Mrs. Brash?
So I want to clarify something. You said your father told you to study both Catholicism and Judaism, correct? And then make a decision? I mean,
he didn't tell me to make a decision.
Or?
Yes, very Catholic.
So why?
My father's very, very devout Catholic. And I'm finding everything I'm learning, with the exception of what we all know is different, it's very similar. My father didn't have a hard time because he was religious. As Ruth said, her parents are religious. I think when you're educated, you understand from where you're coming and where you're going. If I answered your question.
But he told you to study both so that you could make a decision? Was that his reason for saying?
He never said why, but he just said he suggests, as our my father, my husband's future father-in-law, that he would suggest to study and to just really know.
Even though you grew up Catholic.
Yes.
In other words, he got more grounded in Catholicism. Is that what he's... I'm just trying to understand what...
He told me to study
said.
With my husband when we met and fell in love. Instead of just do it just because we're in love and we wanted to do it. With anything, it's important that you have the information. Information is very empowering in any way you can take it, and for anything. Whenever my children have a difficult time making a decision, that's the first thing I say. Information's empowering. Come back to me after you've gathered the information.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you've been able to incorporate elements of the cultures that you grew up with in your Jewish traditions, or just, I don't know, your likes and dislikes, things like that, if you've been able to kind of meld them.
So, in terms of... Okay, say this again.
Sorry. I was kind of thinking out loud. Like, have you been able to incorporate any elements of the culture you grew up with in the way you live now?
Do you mean, like, our background or our religious background?
More like the cultural background.
Right.
Yeah.
So, if you know me at all, I'm a total tiger mom. Just kidding. I actually am, like, a little bit lax. Our daughter's teacher... tells my oldest, she's like, why are you late every day to school? And she's like, my mom tries not to yell at us. So anyway, so I think one of the things I really try to incorporate is, you know, to respect, you know, us, each other, but also just support them. You know, I try to be as much like my mom and dad as possible, because they just set such an example, such a high bar, and I feel like I fail miserably every day. But So, but that's part of the culture, to just give, to show your love. You don't say it, you show it. You give love, and that's how you show love. You do by doing.
I find there are many similarities. The food, the family, education, children are everywhere. I grew up with a father who was so devout. He prayed every morning and every afternoon, like they daven every morning and afternoon. And I started realizing, where's everyone going? I'm like, oh, your grandfather used to do that as a Catholic. But I've developed amazing recipes for Filipino kosher food. And in fact, my family thinks that the kosher Filipino egg rolls, the lumpia, is better kosher.
I just want to say it's commendable that it's so hard, you know, for somebody who's from birth, you know, it's easy, but for you to come from not having a religious, a Jewish religious background, and then deciding on your own to have a Jewish background. What's wonderful from listening to both of your stories is that you really didn't do it alone. You had parents who were supportive, and you had husbands who were supportive, which is beautiful, you know, for you, that you had support from both angles.
For sure. I personally don't know if I could have come this far without, you know, both of them. And even my in-laws. At first they were like, huh? But now they have a kitchenette for us, our children, where they bake their food. And we say one day it's going to be their Pesach kitchen. family is very important.
Okay, thank you so much for a wonderful, wonderful evening.
Thank you.
That's
so beautiful. So inspiring.
Sure.
Thank you.
10 pounds.